God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Not to embarrass you, just to welcome you. Is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? If you could just raise your hand and introduce yourself by your first name.
Hi, Bob.
Welcome.
Anybody else?
Hey, Aaron. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Anybody else? All right, I'm going to do it myself. At this time, please silence your cell phones. I'll be the guy. Let's see. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The AA preamble states, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So this evening, we'll be discussing step one, part one. And please help us welcome our panel tonight. We have Corbin and Laurel. So I promise not to read you to death, but essentially, if this is your first time here, I'll read a section out of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and then our panelists will share for a few minutes each on the paragraph. So we are starting at good old Roman numeral 26, or XXVI, as other people. And let's see. So step one says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable, from the doctor's opinion. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinions to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It accounts for many things for which we could not otherwise account. Laurel?
Hi, I'm Laurel, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello.
Thanks for having me today. First, so my sobriety date is March 7th, 2022. My home group is the No Matter What Women's Group in San Diego, California, and I have a sponsor who knows she's my sponsor, who also has a sponsor who knows that she's her sponsor. So this is when I first came in, I didn't think I belonged here. I thought that I was just a college kid who partied too much. I didn't have anything. I didn't get in trouble with the law yet. And so when I came in, there was no one that looked like me, and there was no one that I was always looking for the differences. I wasn't listening to any of your stories. I was just looking at, like, you know, what you had lost and what everyone looked like, which at that point I was a good person. So I didn't belong here. You know, I was really good in school. I still had my car. I was living with my parents in my mom's basement, and but that was okay because I could still do what I needed to do, which I thought that, you know, it had fostered my drinking, what I thought was okay then. So when I first came in, a lot of these words, it took me forever to get through the doctor's opinion, mind you, because it was really hard for me to focus and sit down when I first got in. I was just told to sit down and shut up because I know everything and I think I'm the smartest person in the room, which I am not. I've come to find out. And so getting through this was really difficult for me just on a reading standpoint and understanding it, because mind you, this was written a long time ago. The vernacular and the way that people put words together really didn't, my brain couldn't comprehend it. So it was difficult. On top of the fact that this was telling me, this book was telling me that I was abnormal in the mind as, or in my body as I was in my mind, which I did not like to hear. That I could not be satisfied. I couldn't control my drinking because I was maladjusted to life. Like that whole phrase and that whole thinking, like it really bothered me. And I wasn't ready to hear what, you know, the solution was because I was so delusional. Like I was in denial that I even needed to be in a space or even be willing to listen, because it was just so, I was in my own world, you know, selfish, self-centered, manipulative. Anything that I needed to get that I wanted, I did in any way that I could. And whether it was drinking, you know, money, to drink, time in order to be alone to drink, like all of that was my life. And, when I heard about and listened to what my sponsor was telling me about this allergy, it started to make sense. Like there was something, cause I thought I was crazy. I was like, everything that I touch is going to complete like utter crap. I can't keep anything for myself. Everyone who comes into my life always leaves. Like, why me? You know, there was no explanation. And so, when my sponsor was talking about this allergy and how, you know, it basically was explaining everything that I couldn't explain for myself, then I was like, okay, I had a word to match with my crazy that made me feel less crazy. Like now I had something that I could be like, all right, well, it's not just because bad things happen to me. It's because I might be an alcoholic. It's because I have an allergy. It's because, you know, I break out in handcuffs, stuff like that. So for to have all of this presented to me in this little package, like I said, was really hard for me to get through. But at the same time, you know, it's in the book in order for a reason. So having it explained in this way and the way that my sponsor told me, you know, to go through it, I mean, you know, it's supposed to happen this way. Like I'm being presented with something that I don't necessarily like about myself and that I may not accept just yet, but this is, and for me, it helped because it was like concrete evidence that I was like, okay, this is something that I'm being shown that is ringing true. If I look at my track record, because the way that I'm living isn't working. So I guess let's try it. And yeah, because it just wasn't working out for me for a while. And it progressively got worse. So this whole allergy idea was huge, because it put a little bit of sense to what I thought was craziness. That's all I have for now. Thank you for sharing.
Corbin? Yes, good evening, everyone. My name is Corbin Trice. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Corbin.
I'll get some house cleaning things out of the way. So my sobriety date is December 10th, 2019. I was blessed with the privilege to be sent somewhere that I had no idea where I was going and didn't have any idea what was going to happen. And today I sit with you separated from alcohol for the last time, in which I hope, right? I have a home group. It's the Churchland group over in P-Town, over in Portsmouth. A lot of great sobriety, a lot of good old time sobriety, a lot of love. Love them to death. I have a sponsor who's actually, we're transitioning right now because of the whole, like, I have an upcoming move coming or whatnot, but I have a sponsor. He, to my knowledge, he has a sponsor. And right now we're actually working the traditions, which is freaking, it's been pretty interesting. But yeah, the allergy aspect of it, right? I'm so happy that Alcoholics Anonymous tells me we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, because for some reason I could not admit that I was powerless over alcohol. I remember, oh man, the progression of alcohol, the malady, the disease is insane, right? Like I can look back in my drinking now and see that my thinking was way messed up. But then also, whenever I started drinking, I never had any intentions of breaking out in handcuffs, as some may say, or freaking, I never had any intentions of like getting a DUI, losing the girl, getting ready to lose the career. I never had any intentions for that, right? It was just going to be that one so I could get the weight off my shoulder, get the world off my back so that I could just relax, so that I could just become who I actually am, right? Like I thought to myself, man, this world doesn't understand that I truly just drink so that I can relax. But then they say, Corbin, we wish you would just stay home. And I was that guy where I thought I had a good plan. I had this really amazing plan, right? Like I'm in the Department of Defense and all this other stuff, and they make all these drinking plans and they say, don't do this. And they give you all these briefs. And I'm thinking, yeah, I won't do that. And then I show up on Monday and they say, what happened? I'm like, I have no idea. I don't know. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard other people tell it for me because they say I accidentally got drunk. And I'm like, yeah, I accidentally got drunk. And I tell the person on the outside that I actually got drunk, and moderate drinker, maybe heavy drinker. And they say, what do you mean by that? I'm like, well, no, I didn't intend to get drunk. I didn't intend to go out there and pass out on the street. I didn't intend to go out there and lose the will. All these things that happen to us whenever we're drinking, right? I didn't intend to do any of these things, but they just kind of happened. And they say, well, why don't you just stop drinking? I was like, what type of stupid, what do you mean when it's just stop drinking? That's not even on the table. Like it's not even an option. I was talking about it with a guy before, and it was just, I had this hostage that I took, and I don't mean it in a negative way. It's just living with an alcoholic is very, very interesting sometimes. And I had this girlfriend at the time that I remember I had a chief that was telling me, oh, Corbin, you should be nicer. Corbin, she just cares and all this other stuff. My first response was, yeah, I know, chief, I'm gonna get rid of it. It wasn't I was going to stop drinking. It was I'm going to get rid of her, right? And that's the type of thing where, like, alcohol, I had to have other people admit that they were powerless as well and tell me about their experience with it, because I just could not admit it. I honestly thought I had a hold of this thing. And what's crazy is in 2017, I was given an opportunity to go to an intensive outpatient, which I definitely shouldn't have been yet, honestly. And I got to meet some of you all, and y'all told me this stuff, and I told my war stories, and it was just, I kind of came in and just messed along the way, right? And then I went back out there into the world with this idea that maybe just a faint chance, maybe I can't drink. And I drank, and I drank hard, way longer than I wanted to. If I'm going to stop, I was in Japan at the time. If I was going to stop to get something to eat, I was going to stop, grab something to eat, no intention of drinking. For some reason, a faint idea pops into my head. And I say, well, if I'm eating, I should be drinking. And I'll just get three. It was these chew hot things, right? And I start eating, I start drinking. I only got three because I think this should hold me over. And then I end up out there and I'm calling people. I'm losing money. I'm coming back home. And they say, Corbin, aren't you on restriction? Aren't you on liberty curtailment? Like, why are you outside? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know why. And they say, okay, well, maybe you should be stuck at base. Okay, sure. If you put me in lockdown, I'm still going to find a way to drink. All these crazy things just kind of happen when I drink. But for some reason, whenever my original sponsor, we sat down and we wrote on step one about powerlessness, right? And he told me to write down 5 instances of powerlessness. And I told him that I couldn't think of many. I flat out, I was like, I don't know, man. Because I thought unmanageability was my aspect, right? Because I had the Navy telling me that I was screwed. I had people telling me I was losing the job. I had people telling me that I really should have been kicked out a while ago and all these other things. But I just couldn't get with the powerlessness thing. Because my life has been so engulfed by alcohol at the time that it's just like, what else is there? There was nothing else. I didn't have any idea of what life without alcohol looked like. And then we honestly sat down and tried to go over my drink, and he was like, so when you got the DUI, did you expect to go out there and get a DUI? Man, I was like, I don't think anybody does that, man. What type of stupid stuff is that, man? But that was one I had to write down. And it's just, it more and more things popped up. And the more that I look back on it, I really had no control over my drinking at all. Like, even as much as I think that I did, it wasn't even close. I remember having incidents where set up this amazing holiday party and everything, and I'm gonna go out and I'm gonna have this great time with all my friends, and I'm a pregame because I've already started getting in trouble multiple times, right? So I can't drink around them the way that I want to. So I'll pregame. My pregame looks like it looks a lot harder than it probably should have been, to the point that I don't even make it out. I don't make it out. I wake up, I got throw up all over the place. I bought the suit, didn't wear the suit. I got the people hit me up and ask me, Corbin, where you at? I don't respond. I wake up and I think to myself, well, missed that one. That just, it just kind of happens. If you drink like I do, it just kind of happens. And I don't mean to do it. I don't mean to miss obligations. I don't mean not to make it to these functions. I don't mean to be so terrible of a person as I am whenever I drink. But when I have one, for some reason, it just demands more and more and more and more. And I don't even, towards the end, I didn't even want to drink. I truly did not want to drink. I started to think that I was a little bit different, and I started drinking. I would have one drink. I would buy three drinks, but I would have one drink that would lead to the next drink that would lead to the next drink that led to the, let's go buy some more. Let's go do some things. Cause I like the party, man. I couldn't get with the whole like responsibly drinking aspect of sitting in my house and just sitting back. I like to go party. I like to go see things. I like to be around people or I thought I did anyway. Once I've been away from it, I'm not a fan of that scene, if I'm being honest, but, and I just remember early on in the last time in which I took a drink, like coming back from the rehab, which I was not sold on, but I remember listening to a speaker tape that talked about the allergy. They talked about the where I put it in my body and I have an abnormal reaction to it and all these other things. And he put it into this way where he talked about if I had a case of Mountain Dew and you really like Mountain Dew and you have one Mountain Dew, I'm not going to go drink all of those Mountain Dews in a case. But why, when I get a case of beer, I must finish that tonight. Like I have to have more. And it's insane because I couldn't tell you why. I'm not even trying to figure out why anymore. I couldn't tell you when I crossed that line that they talk about. I couldn't tell you. I'm not trying to figure it out anymore. I just know that whenever I put alcohol in my body, for some reason, the next one has to come. It just has to come. And I remember they had this stupid little chart where they were like, when you drink, where are you trying to get to? 1 out of 10. I was like, what kind of stupid questions? I want to be at 10, man. I want all of it. Like, I don't want to sit there and get at a 7 and worry about coming back to a 4. I want 10. But because I was in this place in which I had 35 days to be there, I told them, maybe an 8. And I heard the other people saying 6s and 4s. And I thought, why are you here? Like, what is this, man? But in all actuality, I want a 10. And I'm worried about coming back to a 9. I want to stay at 10 without any of the consequences. And that's how I drink. And then even when I know that's how I drink, for some reason, I still drink like that. I have no intentions of drinking like that. I really want the 1. I really want the 3. I really want to have all of those things. But it's just, as I put it in my body, I do not react like that normal person. And it took you all telling me this because I could not see it. I don't know if it was denial. I don't know if it was delusion, because I truly thought that maybe one day I'll be able to drink one beer and be okay. I'll be able to have that ease and comfort we talk about and not have the consequences that come with it. So the allergy of the body for me has been significant in my recovery, right? And it took my sponsor showing me these things, because I missed the doctor's opinion. Like it was said, man, it's old English. I didn't read books. So I didn't even know that I should have started at XX, whatever, right? Like I thought chapter 1 was where it starts at. So let's read chapter 1. Who's Bill? I don't know. Maybe there's some hope. I don't know, a hopeless case. I was like, all right, whatever. Read it like it was a novel and was done. It took somebody telling me, I like this. Let's read this. Let's do this. Can you relate, Corbin? I was like, maybe. And that's what it was. It was just maybe. It was like, maybe. Maybe. And it took some time for me to absolutely say that I 100% admit that I cannot safely drink. That's just not in the book. It's off the table. So, yeah, that's my experience as far as having way more than I intend to. And I have many other stories, but I don't want to sit here and go into straight up drunkologues, because, yeah, it's just like any of us.
All right. Thank you. Thank you both. We're off to a roaring start here. We're going to continue on Roman numeral 28. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is the manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Laura?
I'm Laura. I'm still an alcoholic.
Hey, Laura.
This part about their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve, like, that was totally me. That's still me sometimes when I'm not in the solution. My procrastination gets the best of me. I just remember so many times, like, having the intention of today is the day that I'm going to turn my life around. Like today I'm going to clean my room. I'm going to, you know, wash my car. I'm going to pay all my bills. Everything's going to be great. And I'm going to start a new life today. It's going to be awesome. And then, you know, I get a text message or it's sunny outside, or I'm like, oh, it's Wednesday. Like, or there's a song that plays, or I'm like, the finals are on tonight. I really got to catch that game. Like all of those things. And then I am at the bar. And like it was said earlier, you know, I don't know when I'm leaving. Like I have no idea. I have intentions of staying for a couple. And then so-and-so walks through, or I see my homie, or, you know, oh, I've got enough money in my bank account to just do a few more. But at the end of the day, it really, like, I had no idea when I was going to leave. And towards the end, yeah, it got really scary. And then it piled up with problems. My finances started to become an issue. You know, I wasn't talking to my mom. I was coming in. I would leave at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon and not come in until between six and seven the next day, because I knew that she was leaving for her work between 6 and 7. So I wouldn't have to see her ever. And my dad as well. So there were times where I wouldn't see her for about 3 days on purpose, because I knew exactly what was going on. I mean, I didn't want her to see me in that state. Like, because, you know, it was, I felt ashamed and I felt guilty. And I knew that, and she's told me this now, and she told me it when I was drinking as well. Like, when you leave, I don't know when you're coming back. And it never occurred to me that those were the thoughts that were going through my mom's head. Or, you know, I'll tell friends, oh, I'm just going to go down to the street, or I'm going to go do this real quick and then I'll be back. And then people be like, no, we'll drive you. But no one can drive me because I'm in control. It's fine. I got it. The plans that I make are totally fine. And it just never ended up in the way that I intended. And it got pretty bad, pretty fast. But it happened every single time. And I never knew why. Like, I never knew why it was, and why always me. Like, why does this always happen to me? Like, so-and-so can, you know, they had the same amount as me, but they made it to work the next day. Like, or, you know, they could leave at this time, and the time that they said they were going to leave, they did. And yet, no, I was the one that was closing down the bar every single time. And then towards the end, and I told myself I would never drink the way that I did towards the end. I was grabbing alcohol on the way home, and I was like just drinking it by myself in my mom's basement. And it was like the loneliest I had ever been in my entire life. And I remember sitting there thinking, like, I told myself I would never do this. But at that point, because, you know, our disease is progressive, like, it was okay. Like, I was completely okay with that. And I had plans, and I had the potential to, I had plans to go back to school, and I had plans to, you know, repair the relationship with my mom. And I would do a little bit every now and then, but it wouldn't be enough. There would always be that breaking point. Like, there would always be a point where I was like, it's fine. You know, I can do this today and it'll be all right. Let me figure it out tomorrow. And then my life just turns, you know, it's just all shit again. And I'm back at square one. And it was a mystery. And I didn't believe that I was powerless. Like, I really didn't. And when I was growing up, like, when hearing the word powerless, I always thought it was like being weak and like vulnerability. And being led through the steps by my sponsor and hearing it from other people, that now I have a chance to, like, I get that power back when I say, like, oh, I can't handle my alcohol, or like, I can't drink, you know, at all. And relapse is a part of my story. And I know that not necessarily a thing, a part of everyone's story, but it got progressively worse. And towards the end, it was one of those, yes, I got a DUI, and I was also in the Navy, and I was sitting there, and I remember being in holding, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, what have I gotten myself into? And then I got referred to SARP. And even then I was like, I think I can still, like, I always was like, I think I can still, it's not that bad. Like, I've bounced back before. Like, what's everyone freaking out about? And then it was a couple days before I went into SARP, my mom called me, and my uncle is an addict as well. And he took his own life. And she was like, Uncle Ross is gone. And I was like, what do you mean? And I felt so guilty, and I felt so bad that I couldn't go to the funeral and be there for my family because I had to go to rehab. And I felt like the worst daughter ever. But I had to, like, realize in that moment that, like, okay, I'm getting this opportunity to make myself better. And I'm getting this opportunity to, you know, change my life around. You know, I could go home and I could be there for my family and I could support them. But at the same time, like, what am I doing for myself? Because I've always put everybody ahead of myself. Like, it was always, you know, I'm going to take the shirt off my back to help you get to work, but I need that shirt to get to work. So what do you mean? Like, what are you doing? Like, I never put myself first because I didn't think I ever really deserved it. I never thought that I was worthy of sobriety. And really, sobriety is like all about, you know, love and like loving yourself and like having a higher power and believing in that. And then the fellowship. And I never really, like, I looked myself in the mirror and I hated what I saw. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was, I never really agreed with that. And then I was like, this is the first time that I can give myself a chance. Like, let me just give myself a chance. You know, it's not something that I want to do, but I do need to give myself a chance because I am an alcoholic. And I do realize now that, like, if I put alcohol in my body, like, I don't know what's going to happen. I might wake up over here with whatever, with whoever, with not my keys. Like, it's every single time, you know? And it's now where it comes to a point where I understand that now. And it's crazy how that progressiveness happens, but it's the same spot every single time. Every single time, it's the same spot. So, yeah, that's all I have on that. Thanks.
Yeah, so I was sitting there thinking in my head, I was like, man, I dislike doing some of those speaker engagements or whatnot, but it's just one of those things where it's like, it's good to see genuine people that are not a fan of speaking or whatever, just sitting here telling the story or whatnot. And for my drinking, it tells me that I cannot safely drink, right? And I can sit here and tell you this all day long, but for some reason, it still came to my mind. I was thinking about when she said, I was thinking about that night that I got the DUI, man, I kid you not. I had it under control and I made sure that everybody else knew that I had it under control. But as I started drinking even more, the control was no longer there, but I still drank and I thought I had it under control until I didn't have it under control. And then when I get booked, I'm thinking, oh man, I'll never do this again. Right. I was young and dumb. I thought I was just wilding because I was young, all these other like crazy things. And I started to realize that I might get away with it. And I have other people telling me that it wasn't my fault. And it's like, okay, I'm right back. I kick it off with a 40, an oldie 40, man. I'm talking about soapy water, just heavy on the body. And I start back drinking just as hard as I was before because humiliation does not stop me from drinking. It's just for some reason, I always go back to that one. And the way that I drink, man, like towards the end, it was extremely lonely or whatever, right? But like at one point, I had this point in my life where I was always going to Tokyo, Japan, and I'm always like having these people around me just because I was stationed there. It's not like I actually made a conscious decision to be stationed there. I got the DUI and they tried to save me. So they sent me somewhere where I couldn't have a car. And they have the best public transportation. And I don't understand this. But when I started to realize that it might be a problem, I'd already went through this IOP situation, right? And I still got the same friends. I'm right back to where I was. And I remember getting so honest with these people in this IOP that I told them, man, I don't know if I can't drink. And they told me that I might need a little bit more help. And then if you drink like me, stuff happens. I got put on the legal hold from the NCIS, and it's not like the television show. They don't do all of those things. They just tell you, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do that. But I'm drinking with impunity now. They couldn't care less about all of the alcohol-related incidents where I'm waking up in the streets anymore because they're wondering, am I going to prison? Am I getting kicked out? Am I losing a career? So I remember going to Tokyo with people who don't drink like me, but I thought they did. Maybe they were heavy drinkers. I don't know. I would go up there with the intentions of just staying up there for the Friday night, right? I miss the train. Everybody else goes home. I miss the train. I stay up there. I do whatever I do. I stay up there even long. I wake up on a Saturday afternoon because if you've ever been to Roppongi, Japan, freaking they don't close down until you leave, man. So I would come out. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm trying to find the next spot to go to. Like this is how I drink. I don't even want to be out there that long, but if I'm out here, I might as well do something. I lost all my friends. They're back at home port. They're doing whatever they got to do, right? I'm still partying. And they hit me up and they say on Saturday, they say, Corbin, where are you? I'm like, man, I'm in Tokyo. And they're like, why are you still up there? I'm like, I don't know. I stayed up here for the day. sure. They say, oh, we're going to go somewhere in Yokosuka. I'm like, I'm here already. I'm already drinking because, of course, I started day drinking. I mean, I got to get this stuff off me, right? I start day drinking. I stay up there for the next, that same Saturday night. I don't even need my friends. I could create new friends. This is how I drink. And I stay up there for Saturday night. And then on Sunday, they're talking about coming back. And I'm thinking, maybe I could catch the last train home. If I miss the last train, I'll just catch it in the morning. Because I like to do stuff. I like to go places. I don't intend to waste my entire weekend doing these things, right? Everybody else is doing all this amazing stuff, and I'm literally just drinking my life away because woe is me. I might be going away soon, so I might as well get the stuff out of there. But and that's not even the worst part. The worst part is when I was at home stuck drinking, where it's no longer working, and I'm still putting just as much, if not more, in my body. I'm blacking out, I'm coming to, and the stuff that piles up, I had a house full of cans and bottles all over the place. I'm not inviting people over anymore because I don't want them to see how I'm living, right? And I'm still drinking, and I'm going to work. People are doing like, oh, this or whatever. I'm thinking in my head, man, if you only knew how I drink, bro, if you only knew how bad this shit really is, and I, excuse my French, if you only knew how I drink, and now I can't invite you guys over. I can't go out with you anymore because I've been getting in trouble, and I'm still drinking just as hard, and I'm not able to clean up my own place. The chores are slacking. The hygiene's lacking real hard, right? I don't care if they smell it on me anymore at work. I'm under investigation. I might be losing it all. And I'm still drinking, and I'm just drunk at home because I don't know why I can't stop. It was just this thing where I went through this period for at least maybe a year. It may be long to some. It may not be long to others. I'm talking about the aspect where the allergies just on me for so long and so hard that everything else just falls to the wayside. I couldn't care less. And somehow this lady, this woman that I was with, this lady that I've been able to make amends or whatever. And I funnily say, like, the hostess or whatever, she might have needed Al-Anon, honestly, but she stuck with me throughout that whole thing, man. Like, she may have been able, I don't know, that's not for me to answer, but she stuck with me throughout that whole situation. And I was just this sack of just garbage to her, man. I was absolutely horrible. I hated what I was doing to her, and I still did it. I'm telling you, I drink and I'm not the person I want to be. I'm not the person I think I can be. I'm not. It's alcohol, man. It's just this. I knew nothing else. It's like, what else do I do? No, I must have missed everything they were talking about in 2018 whenever they were telling me it was another way of life and all this. I must have missed all of that. I must have missed all of 12 steps. I must have missed. I wasn't ready at that time. But when I went back out drinking with all of that stuff that might have seeped in and I kept drinking, that's when it gets really ugly, and I'm told, and I see it, that it can get even worse. And I'm like, man, that's crazy. And yet I still have those little thoughts that pop in, because not only is it the bodily allergy, it's the mental obsession where the composure has been lifted, right? Like doing the works, staying around the fellowship, all that aspect of whatever. But for some reason, I still understand that sense of ease and comfort that comes from taking that first drink, that, man, the window is so small. It's super small for a person like me now, where I feel real good, everything's all right, and it's all bad, and it's right back all bad. And I know what the next answer is. I know I'll take another drink to try to fix that little that is all bad now, and I'm just drunk. I just get drunk. Nothing else gets accomplished. The things that are causing all these issues don't get fixed, but for some reason I'm still drinking, and I can't tell you. I don't know why. All the psychiatrists, all the psychologists, all the therapists, all the friends, all the caring family members, all that stuff. They ask me, why do you drink like this? And I can't answer it. I don't know. But for some, like, I come here and y'all tell me these things. And I'm like, okay, I think like that. I drink like that. And I felt like that. Like, that's me. That's 100% me. I don't know why I drink. I mean, it's one of those things. I heard fish swim, drunks drink. I was like, okay, all right, maybe we'll go with that, right? And man, I don't know, the allergies, it's insane, because it's funny, if I stay away from the drink, right, it's not like it's on me anymore, but for some reason when I put it in my body, I don't know. Yes, relapse is possible. I just don't know how long that relapse may look like, right? Like, I hear people say they slipped into 11 years out, or they slipped into years out, right? And I just don't want that today, because I can't risk it. I'm a dead man walking, bro. I really am. I'm just another drunk who has today. And if I take that one drink, that one that I think I get a white chip, I'll come back. I don't know what it looks like. I don't. So, oh, that's my experience with the allergy aspect, the tenets of being in this limited class. Like, I'm in some elite class of alcoholism that doesn't exist on the outside. But here, for some reason, if I compare myself, I'm like, oh, I'm not that bad. But yeah, I am. Anyway.
Thank you.
That was great. All right, we're going to continue on Roman numeral 28. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Okay, I guess we can go home now. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive, while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. On the other hand, and strange as it may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules.
Perfect. Laurel alcoholic.
Laurel.
So it never occurred to me that I was my problem. Like, I thought my drinking was my problem. I thought the alcohol and the amount and the places that I was going, I thought that was it. I thought that was the issue. I am my problem. When I wake up untreated, you know, by default, like, I'm selfish and I'm seeking power. You know what I mean? So to be able to say that I am powerless over something that has, you know, pretty much wrecked my entire life, and that's honesty. And that's also, you know, that's awareness and just off rip. And I haven't really even done anything yet. I've just said to someone or admitted, hey, I can't do that anymore. And when I went to rehab for the first time, my counselor wrote up on the board alcohol problems, and then it was in a circle. Like, we were the circle, and then he took away the alcohol and the problems were still there. And I was like, I don't think that's right. Because every time I drink, my problems happen. So, like, what do you mean? And it really, I mean, it makes sense. It makes perfect sense, you know. Manipulative, selfish, all those things, like, even before I drank, were there because I was not okay with life. I thought that everyone else had gotten so much more than I did. You know, I came from a single parent household. My dad didn't want me. My life was the way that it was because you wouldn't understand. Like, I drink this because, you know, woe is me, like, super victim. And it really just got to a point where I thought that I needed to change everything around me. And it never occurred to me that I needed to change what was on the inside, because I thought that I was fine. I didn't even need to be here. I was here so everybody else could get off my back. Like, I'm just here so my mom stops telling me that I need to stop drinking and that I can show up to Christmas dinner without being super hungover, because my birthday happens 2 days before. And so, like, why would I not show up to Christmas, you know, super duper messed up? Because me and Jesus basically share the same birthday. And so it's like, the things that I thought were okay weren't okay. And it was a result of just me, the way that I was. And alcohol made me okay. It made me, and it wasn't even that I was wanting to drink because, yeah, I liked the feeling, but I was the prettiest and I was the funniest. And it, you know, made me more outgoing. And I was able to mold to whatever you wanted me to be. And so that we could all have a good time. Because that was one of my going through the steps. Step four, figuring out one of my character defects, which is people pleasing. So as long as everyone else is having a good time, as long as I think that you're having fun, then I can mold to whatever happens. Because I'm still controlling the situation. It's control, you know, it's that power. And so for me to just follow a few simple rules, it was hard. Because I wasn't willing to give up that control. And I didn't think that everything would be okay. And it ended up being just fine. You know, after a while, it took a couple of trial and errors, because I still believe that I can still drink just a little bit, or I can just do, well, I won't drink like IPAs because that makes me gain weight, so I'm just gonna do vodka water and sodas. Like, it doesn't work like that. Like, it was always something different. It was always, but I still ended up in the same place, like I was saying earlier. I mean, it was the same thing over and over again, and it was, there was nothing different. So for me, and as something as a simple rules, like, it was like, what do you mean I just have to follow the simple rules? Like, this doesn't seem like, like, if this was, and it's for free, like, everyone should be doing this. Like, this is, why is it so hard? Why is it so hard? And it was a matter of me giving up that power. It was a matter of me just letting go, just letting something else outside of myself take care of something and not worry about it for two damn seconds. And because my brain goes like nuts all the time, like untreated. And I wake up and like without, you know, a solution, like I'm nuts. And I've got anxiety and I've got all this and that, and I'm worried about how I'm going to get here and how to pay this and how to pay that. But really, at the end of the day, I don't have control over anything except for my attitude and that I stay sober. And so I know that I, to put those things into, you know, the tools that I've been taught by y'all is, you know, call another person, call someone else in the program. You know, if I get angry, oh my God, I did not know anger until I got sober. Like, I thought everything was going to be so, like, what do they call it? Like strawberries and I don't know, rainbows or whatever. Like, I seriously thought that everything was going to be solved. And I was the most angry probably the first 90 days of my sobriety than I had ever been in my entire life. Because every time that I got irritable or I got mad, I was drinking about it. I didn't have alcohol anymore. So now I was left to my own devices to figure out what was going on. And at first I thought that it was my fault, but it wasn't. It really wasn't my fault. It wasn't my responsibility to figure some shit out though. Excuse me. You know, cause I just hadn't realized like how much damage that I had caused throughout my drinking. And I just, cause I had so many good intentions. Like it was going to be all fine. And it wasn't. And, you know, it really got to a point where I was like, okay, obviously the way that I'm living isn't working, so I guess I'll take some suggestions. And even now, still sometimes I'm like, I want to take that power back. I get new news in my life and I'm like, I don't know how that's going to happen. I don't know what's going to go on. And then I got to call my sponsor. I got to call someone else that I know. And I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to deal with this. So what should I do? And then they'll, you know, just talk about it with another alcoholic. And then you know, we say a prayer or something like that. And then I turn around and I'm like, well, how's your day? So I can think about myself for 2 seconds, like what a concept. And, you know, just getting outside of myself and really just doing things that make me uncomfortable, like doing things that I know that are probably good for me, but that are so uncomfortable. And it's just, it's not fun, but because I've been able to do it on a regular basis and really like see the gratitude and really see the fruits and the principles that and the promises that come to life, like it just shows me that like I don't have to do anything else except for show up. Like everything else is going to be taken care of. And that is hard. That's probably the hardest thing that I do every single day. And sometimes I just gotta throw my hands up and be like, you got it, you know, talking to my higher power, like you got it. And I don't know when that happened. I don't know when that like blind, like trust was like, all right, yeah, sure, whatever. Sometimes I'm not in it. Sometimes I'm in that anxiety and I'm like, how's this going to work out? Like, is so-and-so going to do this? Like, da, 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 da. I got to call them so they know exactly what's going on. Like me manipulating and controlling the situation. But at the end of the day, it's just like, you know what? You got it, you know? And then just letting shit happen. And you know, I can sit here today and tell you that like everything's going to be okay. You know, went through a lot of stuff with the DUI and, you know, with my Navy career and like not knowing if I was going to stay in or not. But really at the end of the day, I was like, whether I stay in or not, you know, I am an alcoholic and I know I have to be sober. So whether I get an opportunity to keep going or whether I have to go back home, like at the end of the day, I know that my sobriety comes first and everything goes after that. And like that's the God honest truth. Like it just happens that way, you know? And I've gotten that from you guys. Like I've gotten that from stories of other people who I initially thought that I was nothing like, you know. And you know, at the end of the day, like, we're just all, you know, trudging, doing the same stuff. And you would never know it unless you came into one of the rooms. But I'm glad that I got, you know, the opportunity to experience it, because it's definitely something that saved my life. All just because I was like, you know, halfway, you know, all right with doing what y'all did, and, you know, shit just happens. So yeah, that's all I have on that.
Thanks for sharing. I love the why of Alcoholics and like of the doctor's opinion, right? And I used to hear it all the time from the guys in the SUF groups and all these other things. Heck, I even know a few in here that say they talk about the why, right? Men and women drink essentially because they like the effects produced by alcohol. Had you have asked me that a couple of years ago, going to a lot of these like help sessions or whatever, right? The IOP, the rehabs and stuff like that. They have this sheet that says, why do you drink, woman? And they have these stupid little questions. And I was like, oh, yep, I'll give you that one. Won't give it early on. I won't give you all of them because then I'm definitely alcoholic, right? Later on, it looks a little bit more full and it gets even worse and it gets even worse. But honestly, it just comes down to the fact that I like what alcohol did for me. That's what separates me from the pack, man. I like how alcohol makes me feel. I like the effects produced by alcohol. And it's so great whenever it first happens that I continuously chase that feeling. And I continuously chase that way out, honestly, man. It was like the best thing that ever happened in my life. It took the weight off my shoulders. It allowed me to be more friendly. You guys got more excited. It just helped so much. But it's crazy because even whenever it wasn't working, I still thought that I could possibly get it back. And it tells me that I see others drinking with impunity. And I think to myself, why can't I drink like them? Why can't I drink like them? I said today that I don't even want to drink like them, but for some reason, I still want the effects with still being able to get what I need to get out of alcohol, right? And then the thing that really gets me is it talks about how the shift happens, that psychic change happens and all this other stuff, which they may consider to be a spiritual awakening, a spiritual experience and all this other stuff, right? Because I didn't want to do the spirituality of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have any other choices, if I'm being completely honest, right? I didn't want the God thing. I didn't want the almighty, all-powerful or anything like that. And they said it could be something that was personal to me. It just had to be. Appendix 2 is the spiritual experience, and it talks about a psychic change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. I thought, maybe. That's been my theme throughout Alcoholics Anonymous this whole time, is maybe, right? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're right. Maybe they do have a solution to this. Maybe, because apparently what I'm doing, how I'm living, what I'm doing in my life is just absolutely wrong, man. Like, it's been a lot of hard knocks to figure out that what I do, what, like, my first thought seems to be wrong the majority of the times, because I'm extremely reactive and all these other things that I found out through working the steps, through going through with an inventory and things like that. But some on the outside may call it a paradigm shift and all these cool words that these people with degrees talk about and all this other stuff, right? But it's completely different. I have people that knew me when I was drinking, they didn't see me for a little bit, and then they see me now at this location and they're like, oh yeah, you've changed. And I'm like, man, if you only knew what had to happen for this to even progress. Like, I had to get out of my own way. I had to allow you all to show me this way of life. I had to allow something outside of myself to assist me along the way, because I didn't want to live the way that I was living for a while when I was continuously living that way. Yeah, and for some reason you guys and girls seem to have some solution to this thing. Y'all seem to have a way better life than I would have ever expected. Today, I don't have to live the way that I was living. And I feel like, honestly, sometimes, some days, I feel like that's really the only thing that I have control over, because I'm not saying I have control over alcohol. I came in here without control, and I still have no control today, right? But I do have some tools in which you all gave me so that I can continuously put a buffer in between me and that drink, man, because I don't make the decision if I am or if I am not. It's something outside of me that's helping me with that, man. But at least I have some tools that allow me that buffer in between so that I can actually pray, meditate, talk to another alcoholic, like all these other things that's been placed in my life. But it's a shift, man. It's a complete 180. I'm not the same person that I used to be. I have ambitions. I have goals. I have love for others. I have all these amazing things that I used to hear other people talking about. And I was like, big whoop. I don't care, man. Just teach me how not to drink. What's the secret sauce? I don't want to drink anymore. I don't want any of that stuff. I just don't want to drink. And it's like, okay, just keep coming back. And I'm like, I just don't want to drink, man. And that's how I came in. I just didn't want to drink. And y'all gave me something that was so much better than just not drinking. It's so great that I can't even explain it, but you get to see it on a regular basis. All the happy people, all the smiles, all the giggles by the coffee, all the people going out doing amazing fellowship aspects without having to drink. All of this amazing stuff that's the byproduct of not drinking, sobriety, right? I know my dry date. I really don't know when I got sober. If I'm being completely honest, I know my dry date, and I say the last time that I had a drink was on the 10th of December, 2019, but I was absolutely miserable for a few months because I didn't want to get into the practice of what you guys were talking about. So when did the sobriety start to happen? I don't know. It's not for me to discuss. I'm not trying to figure it out either. I just know today I have a life that is way beyond my wildest dreams. It's all because Alcoholics Anonymous, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous has given me something in which I can try to give back to the next person, because it sucks seeing somebody die, man. It in the rooms, I had taken it for granted while I was in Yokosuka, because we all had like a lot of active duty service members or whatever, right? Younger. And if you really mess up, they see you back, right? So you don't really see too many of the in and out. I think when I first got to Portsmouth, man, when I got to P-Town, I think my first 2 weeks, somebody had died on the doorstep at freaking the scout cabin, rigor mortis whenever they got there, all this other stuff. And they say he drank himself to death. I had a guy that was in the rooms for freaking like 12 years, went out and just had the hardest time getting back, died in a motel when he has a freaking house with family and stuff like that. And that's the ugliness of this disease. But today I sit here with you, recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. And I'm not going to get into the debate of am I recovered, am I in recovery? It's not for me. I couldn't care less. Whatever you got is what you got. But I know today I don't have to put it in my body. And that's a blessing. That is a miracle. Like, that is insane. So Alcoholics Anonymous does something. It's got something going on in here, because I didn't want this spiritual awakening. I didn't want this psychic change. I didn't want this spiritual experience. I just wanted to not drink. And today I can tell you the best thing that I do on a regular basis is not drink and try to help somebody else. And I'm not, that's not normal for a selfish, self-centered guy like this. And I find out all of this through the book. None of this is special. It's not. They wrote about it years ago. Somebody else read it with me and showed me a way of life that I've been given. And I'm just here to tell you that it actually works. It really works. And if I needed a little bit of hope, I go to a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and I see I have miracles on a regular basis. I have these stupid little things that pop up on my day-to-day life and I think, whoa, is me. And then I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm like, wow, yeah, this is really the blessing. This is the miracle of it all. So with that, I mean, I'm forever grateful to it. This program is giving me something that's beyond my dreams, honestly, beyond anything that Corbin could fathom. So I thank you all, honestly.
Beautiful.
That's the landing. That was beautiful. Step one is the only step that talks about the problem, really. So it's a little bit heavy. Step one's a little bit heavy, right? There's 11 more that come after that. But I'll do this one paragraph without comment on page 152. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I am willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus, we find the fellowship, and so will you. So I'm going to pass the seven tradition basket. We have no dues or fees, but here's where we put them. Thank you, Corbin.
Oh, man.
It's a tough crowd. The seven tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? Yes, sir.
Robert, I'm alcoholic.
Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
Corbin's still alcoholic. There's this cool little Wakefield campfire conference coming up. It's September 22nd to the 24th. And when I tell you, it is absolutely amazing. Somebody in the room got me to go out there last year. And it was pretty freaking amazing. It's a great time. You just kind of go out there and listen to the bell for the most part. There's a website on, they have a website, the WakefieldCampfireConference.com or whatnot, that you can sign up early, or you could just get there like a good old alcohol and just honestly pay right then and there and get in. So, Wakefield Campfire Conference, September 22nd to the 24th. Thank you.
That's a good time.
Yeah.
I'm an alcoholic named David.
Hi, David.
It's too early to announce this, so I'm not announcing it. But at the end of January or near the end of January, this home group is putting on a safety and AA workshop, and it's going to be on Zoom end of July. Did I say June?
Year.
January. Starts with a J. It's a J month. It's a J month.
It's just early. It's just early.
It's very early.
So do me a favor and going to be on Jupiter. Much like me. There's some yellow flyers on the table over there that have all the details. And the whole reason I'm telling you this is so maybe you'll just pick up a couple on your way out, take them back to your home groups, help us get the word around. Don't cost nothing. It's for fun and for free. Thanks. Any other announcements? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. There's literature available over there. If you can fold it, it's free. If you'd like a book and can't afford one, talk to me. We'll make a deal. It'll be all right. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. Or if you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the buck can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audios and recordings of and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. The meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Cafe Stella on the corner of 22nd and Colonial, right across from Bank of America, just down the street, not far at all. In closing, could we thank our lovely panel one more time? Thank everyone who participated. Someone made the coffee tonight, all this up so that people here and criticize it. And I've asked Tim to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Tim, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tim.
But obviously, you cannot train having God. So see to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God, and admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. That's my dream.
Good job.
Let's circle up. Our Father,
thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power and glory.
Amen.
All righty.